Thank you very much. I would like to thank all the organizers for inviting me to come here to this wonderful place. In particular, when I left my hometown, it was snowy and icy, and so that's a big difference coming to here. But I was told today on the phone that this has changed and it's very warm now in Vienna too. My talk will consist of two parts. In the first part, I will extend the notion of structure from minimum free energies, and I will still stick within the relation between single sequences and structures. And the second part is the part which is related to evolution, and there I will consider all possible sequences or large sets of sequences which can be scanned in evolution and see how these large sets are related to structures. I will not talk about dynamics of evolution because that would really be too much for a lecture, but if somebody is interested, I could give a short seminar, half an hour, on this topic later this week. In the first part, I can build on previous talks which we have heard. I heard it yesterday, but I was told that you did already in the previous week, go into RNA structure, which makes things very simple for me because I can skip all this part which is related between sequence and secondary structures and the prediction problem. I would like to start out with an old transparency of mine, which is about 10 years old, which was I was drawing for a talk where we discussed differences between minimum free energies and what people find and call kinetic structures, and I will come back to this in detail later, and the so-called phylogenetic structures, where Gary has given an idea in his nice talk yesterday about these structures. Now, phylogenetic structures, as has been said, they don't cover all the interactions, and therefore they are usually higher in energy than the other structures. But there may be a situation, and this was just a suggestion, that we have two structures. One has the minimum free energy, and there is another one which is apparently also has a long life, is a long lifetime, and is of what you would like to call metastability. And the idea was you have a complicated energy surface, the conformational variables, and here is the free energy. And on this conformational surface, you have one deepest point, which corresponds to the minimum free energy conformation. And then you have a large barrier, which leads to separation, complete separation at room temperature. It would take much longer than you do in experiment to pass that barrier. You have a second family, which then has a local minimum being a metastable structure. Now, the phylogenetic structures are structures which are derived by comparing different sequences and looking for, as Gary told yesterday, looking for conservations of exchanges. So if you exchange a base on one point, and you conclude on interactions within the structure. Well, you get an energy value in this way. And this energy value, maybe you can really, it's an old transparency, you can also leave it out here. This energy value is higher than of the real structure, of any of the real structures, usually, because you don't get all the interactions. The same is true, for instance. Yeah, well, this is another story. These are the energy values, and the energy values, they are not the parameters. They are not really completely. But in the phylogenetic structure, you don't see all interactions. If you just look on sequence comparisons, there may be interactions which just don't show up.
Given a given functional, you realize
Yes, yeah, but the phylogenetic structure is not constructed in that way. You look on sequences, you compare the different sequences, and you see simultaneous exchanges. So if you exchange a base here, you exchange always a base other, and another point, so that you can conclude that there is a base pair between these two positions. And you find a certain number of these interactions, but you don't find all of them. Please. I'll come back to that. This is just confirmations, calculated suboptimal confirmations. And I will.
The values are not real energy, but the calculated energy. The difference is that real energies are, so to say, precise, but calculated energies.
Sure. But the phenomenon I'm going to talk about now, for instance, barrier size and frequency of transition, does not depend whether you have an accurate energy or not. It depends whether the barrier is high or not. And you will see.
And kinetic structure, experimental kinetic structure.
I will explain it, and I will explain it how we get it in a few minutes. Please. Here. Well, this is something that chemists, for instance, use, and they don't know what that really is. I will show you how to do it for the secondary structures. Now you can in principle you can define your conformational variables. This is all degrees of freedom in a polynucleotide. But this is a huge space. Conformational space is an enormously large space, and so for the purpose of illustration, people either use one dimensions like this has been done here, or there are these famous funnel diagrams where you just make conformational space in the size of two dimensions. In reality, this is many thousand dimensions in a nucleotide. You have, for a single base, you have about 7 degrees of freedom. What I say here is. Here I have a minimum, and here I have another minimum. That's all what I'm saying. Excuse me?
You know
it. I know it, and I will show you. This will be the subject of my talk. Yeah. Okay. Here.
Corresponds to a horizontal state.
Yeah. You will see it on the next.
But in the case,
when
the real structure is null.
Yeah.
Real structure close to the minimum energy structure or close to the finite energy structure.
That depends very much what kind of molecule you have. I will come to these points. Nature, for instance, in evolution has, we believe, selected for structures which have a defined minimum free energy conformation and which don't have nearby lying suboptimal states. You will see this. But if you take a molecule, just you choose a sequence, and you look at the structure, it usually will have nearby lying suboptimal conformation. Yeah. Now I'm talking about RNA molecules in general, not only about natural RNA molecules. This is a special subset. Okay? Well, that depends on the molecule you are looking at. So what this slide says here, you get some energy values, where the lowest one is called the minimum free energy value. And then you see also, sometimes, you see structures, they show up which do not coincide with the minimum free energy structure. And they depend on the kinetics of the folding process. We have many examples. I will show you a particular nice one later in the talk. This will be an experimental result.
But this is assuming you actually know all the parameters for calculating the free energy. I would think that the
no,
structure
no.
would be a guidance
I,
to construction.
Yeah, sure. I do not claim that the energies, when you calculate them, are precise. My claim is that you get a term scheme which is related to that what you find with a real RNA molecule. That means the sequence of levels and the nature of the barriers between them. But you will see that in the talk. I think I shouldn't have taken this old transparency and show you how we see this concept, which will be restricted to secondary structures here. So if you are talking only about minimum free energy structures, you are talking about the situation which is 0 degree Kelvin and the thermodynamic limit that you have infinite time to reach it. If you release the temperature conditions so that you go to higher temperature than 0 degree, you are dealing with a number of suboptimal structures, and I will show you how many there are and how we can get information on them. And this is a whole set that goes up at least to zero energy, and zero energy will be the open chain where I have opened up all base pairs. And then if I release the infinite time relation, then I will get relations between individual structures which are time dependent. For instance, if you look here, this is the minimum free energy structure that happens to be here. Then there is a conformation S1, the next conformation, which happens to be related to this structure here by an enormously large barrier. And you can easily understand why this is so. These two structures have no base pair in common. When you want to go from this secondary structure to this one, you have to open all your base pairs and then close them in another manner. So that means that you have to go up there. But there are other structures, like for instance S2 belonging to this family, S3 and S4 belonging to this here, which if you just look on a term scheme of suboptimal structures, you don't see these relations. And so one of the subject of my talk will be that in order to be able to discuss the kinetics of RNA folding, we have to know what these levels are, what the valleys look like, and how large the barriers are in between. Now these two structures, the two ones which I was drawing here, these are two molecules of the same length. This forms a base pair from one end to the other. And this forms a base pair from both ends to the middle. And there are no base pairs in common. Well, we can... You are right. You could, for instance, say, I remove these two base pairs, and then I close this one here. This would be a way to find a pass of lower energy. However, in this case, you get a structure which has a very high energy here because you have a kind of single base pair which is unstable in this case. So what we actually do, we compute all suboptimal structures, and we have to relate them. And this is the folding algorithm that relates them. And our resolution is elementary base pairs. So we go to base pair opening and base pair closure. And we just have one more move, which I will explain later. Okay? So I will give you a good argument, and I will show you the data that actually this is the case. And I will show you an example where this happens in a nice experiment that has been done this year. So coming back to how to compute structures, you have heard so much about the minimum free energy. Excuse me. Well, the phylogenetic structures These were the structures Gary was talking about yesterday. So these are the structures which you infer by looking on relations between base exchanges through mutation. And then you have to, if you have a tree, you can easily derive a structure. If you don't have a tree, this is what we heard yesterday. I'm not mentioning it, and it's just on the transparency, so I should actually scratch it out. Excuse me.
How do you know it's a tree?
Well, for the phylogenetic structure, but because this is evolution, you have ancestors.
Yeah, but this and particular problem is not because of a common ancestor.
No. This has nothing to do. This has nothing to do with a phylogenetic tree.
Yeah, right.
This is. Excuse me.
But you joined this like.
This is a very special tree.
This is a binary tree that you could join here.
Well, it needn't be a binary tree, but it happened to be, because there is always a state. This is some state which does not correspond to a minimum, where you go. It's like the chemists say, transition state. It's a saddle point on the energy surface where you go from here to here, and saddle points connecting more valleys. They are very isolated points on the surface, and they actually play no role in this kind of. So this is a tree which is calculated from suboptimal structures. I think you will see it better soon. So I needn't talk about the minimum free energy structures anymore. What I'm going to do here is to use another shorthand notation for secondary structure, which is very convenient for computing, because it's just a string over a three-letter alphabet, where the three-letter alphabet are left parentheses, right parentheses, and the dots. Any parenthesis corresponds to a base pair in this notation. So, for instance, if we go here, here I have 1, 2, 3. We have 7 points here, which is this loop. And then we have the first base pair going from here to here, the next going from here to here, and so on. And if you subscribe to the mathematical way to work with parentheses, this is unique. And this is unique related to this type of structures and to other models of structures, which you can use. The convenience is that it's a string, and you can easily work with the computer on it. And the second thing I want to bring your attention to, because it will play a role in a few seconds, is if you look carefully up here, you see not only the usual bases A, U, G, Z, you see other letters. These are modified bases in the tRNA, which is the molecule I'm showing here, and I will discuss the role of this modified basis a little bit later. Now, this is only in the conventional secondary structure notation, without pseudonauts. With pseudonauts, you need colored parentheses, and you can actually do it. This is most of the simple pseudonauts are discussed in this way, and you have square brackets and parentheses and so on, which is the same as. But here you don't need the colors. The colors are here just for convenience. Now, how to compute suboptimal structures. And there is, in 89, Michael Zucker published a paper and made available an algorithm called M-fold, where you can compute suboptimal foldings of an RNA molecule. Unfortunately, with this algorithm, which is efficient and works very well, you do not find all suboptimal structures. There are classes of structures which you cannot find. What we have done is we took the Waterman-Smith algorithm, which has been used for alignment where you compute the optimal alignment, and you compute in a band also alignments which are not optimal, but which may be useful, for instance, for certain purposes when you put on it as a constraint. And what we have done, we took the Waterman-Smith algorithm and applied it to RNA folding and to energy minimization. And what you get then is all suboptimal states within a certain energy barrier above minimum free energy state. And you just, when you do the backtracking, you do not allow for energies higher than a certain value. And in this way, you get the complete set. When you do this, at least for us, it was a surprise. This is just a very, very small molecule. It's only 30 bases long, and it was studied by Jan Cooper in his diploma thesis in our group. It has a here is the egg and here is the egg and a long end, which doesn't form any structure. When you compute the number of possible suboptimal structures, you get 1.4 million. And this is when you compute the density of states of these structures. So this is actually the bad news. This is minimum free energy structure here with zero. And then you see there is some structure in, but it's more or less a Gaussian distribution, coming very close to such a Gaussian distribution. What you realize is that the majority of these structures are somewhere very high in energy. Now there comes the good news when you restrict yourself. Excuse me? This tail, I look at this tail right now. This tail is uninteresting. This is just very high line. They have all single base pairs or two base pairs. Now, the good news is when you go to the surrounding of the minimum free energy structure, the number of suboptimal states goes down drastically. So the majority of these states is not interesting. This is just as you said, it's the low energy tail, and it's the tail which is relevant for us.
So the minimum structure is about 4 standard deviations.
That's you calculated it very quickly. Yeah, you're right. About that. We have not looked whether this is in general the case. I'm just presenting you this example. You have to go to very small molecules because otherwise these are not millions. These are billions and billions of billions of states. Which this is 30 was 30.
Basic.
No. This was just a, well. It was not completely random. It was one. Which we were choosing for that purpose, so that you can calculate all suboptimal states and so on. What I showed you was the ground state here. This hairpin, yes, for this sequence. It's hairpin with a bulge, if you remember. Okay, now. I come to my second point. When you have all these suboptimal structures, you want to weight them, and you want to throw away all these with positive energies, because if you have a positive energy, then the open chain is more stable. So John McCaskill in 90 published an algorithm, it has been mentioned yesterday, where you can directly compute not the minimum free energy structure, but the partition function of the whole molecule in terms of secondary structures. And just to remind you what this partition function simply is, I'll give you here the formula. And we have later used this algorithm and implemented them for the Vienna RNA package, where you can readily use it for computations. It's all the conformations you go through, and you weight it by the usual Boltzmann factor, you get the partition function of the molecule. Now, let us look like how suboptimal states manifest themselves in the partition function. And this is one example. This is another molecule. It's 28 bases long, and it has been chosen on purpose to be able to show a situation where you have two nearby lying states. If you look on the energies of these states, what you get here is a minimum free energy conformation, was the one that you have seen at -5. And then 0.5 kilocalories per mole, you find the first suboptimal conformation, and you find the second suboptimal conformation, only 0.55 kilocalories per mole above ground state. Now here, you see this as a representation of secondary structure, where you plot the sequence here and you plot the sequence here, and wherever we have a base pair, you put a square, a full square of size 1 here into that. And this is the structure that we have seen here. You see 1, 2, 3 base pairs here. These are these 1, 2, 3 base pairs. And then here 1, 2, 3, 5 base pairs are these base pairs here. And this interruption is caused by this bulge, which you have here. Now you can do the same thing, computing the partition function, and you relate now the size of the dots to the frequency a base pair is occurring in the corresponding partition function. So this frequency will, in general, be less than 1, unless all structures have a base pair in the same position, and it will be 1. And what you see here is you can recognize the old molecule here, which is 1, 2, 3 here, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 here. But you immediately see there are other things coming up, 1, 2 here, 1, 2, 3 here, and additional dots over there. Now this is a molecule which has a few low-lying states, but then is very little disturbed, and therefore you see only a few points here, but you see the superposition in the partition function very well. Now let's do the same thing with the tRNA, and we did it here with the phenylalanine tRNA. As you can see here, this is the clover leaf. Here, the terminal stack, and here the three internal stacks, 1, 2, 3, this is the terminal stack here. And now look at the partition function. If you look carefully, you see lots of dots here. So that means there are many alternative conformations, and if you look careful here, this looks like a real disaster, because here you have one which is only it's almost the same stability, the same energy as the ground state conformation, and this is 0.3 kilocalorie per mole above, so it's also very low to the ground state. This is the molecule without modified bases. Now what happens in nature is, after transcription, the RNA molecules, the tRNA molecules, are processed. And if you introduce now the modified bases and look for cells which cannot pair, what you see immediately that most of the dots are gone, and the stability of this structure here in blue, which is the minimum free energy structure, is very high. So here we see apparently that nature selects for a molecule with a stable ground state. Please. Well, there is very little precisely known about that. There are some values available which we have incorporated where possible. The maturity with the methyl substitutions cannot pair, and these are the they really have the most important influence. Yeah, please. Well, the molecule is synthesized as a polyTRNA. So it means it's not a single molecule. There are many molecules, one after the other. And then there is a special enzyme cutting the tRNA. It's ribonuclease P, where we have a ribose molecule doing the catalysis. And then cleaves the tRNAs in such a way that they become single tRNAs. But the next step is that they have introns. So that means there are stretches in here, in most of the tRNAs, stretches in here which have to be cut out. And then during this splitting, splicing out of the introns, and later the modifications occur. Excuse me, you mean this? It makes an additional base pair here. Yeah, and it makes shortens this stack and makes the other stack longer. No, it is still here. So this one is still here when you have to modify bases. So, yeah, this is still here. Otherwise, it couldn't be here in the set of the modified bases. Well, as I said before, we are looking for general phenomena. We cannot claim that our calculations is accurate to this amount. And I will later come back to a problem which is related to end-on-end stacking, which changes the stability again a lot. And this is sensitive to end-on-end stacking. What you have in nature is you have two stacks in the tRNA making this L-shaped molecule, where this one stacks on this and this one stacks on this. And this is in the conventional secondary structure calculation. It's not included, but I come to that. I show you examples of that. Our other, for instance, I can show you. This is this state here, for instance. This state here, which is not formed anymore, and which then a number of dots disappear. And apart from this one, which you cannot get rid, or you don't get rid by this modification, again, this is within the set of available parameters. You see here the other one is 0.93, and this one, the next one, is 0.13. So modification, except this first state, shifts the suboptimal states up. Now, please.
If you take RNA without modification, can you renature it?
That depends very much. Yeah, that depends very much on the particular tRNA you are talking about. You have about 30 different tRNAs in the cell, and they show different behavior. Well, the people renaturing tRNAs say is that the recovery with modified bases is usually not more than 80%. So, with modified bases. Without. It's very little actually known, but the recovery is lower. There's only in one case which has been studied. This is aspartyl tRNA, has been studied together with mutants. And in order to be able to study this with mutants, this was all done without modified bases. And there they had lower recovery. But this is only one case.
What is low?
No. It's not 80%, but it's somewhere between 60% and 70%. It's approximately the same. Yeah.
So in this case, we see no crucial influence of modification.
It depends. The actual work to see whether a tRNA is active or not can really work on the ribosome. This has not been done without modified bases. Only single steps. For instance, recognition by the enzyme has been done without modified bases, and that's very crucial. There are some mutants which are tolerated; other mutants are not tolerated. Please.
The example you saw, the suboptimal structural flaws in the kinetic tree we saw in the beginning. So, are there any examples that they come from different sides of the tree?
I show you experimental data on that for one particular nice case, but it comes in a few minutes. Okay, so. This about partition function. And now we wanted to resolve the process to elementary steps and to design a folding algorithm. There are many folding algorithms around in the literature. People, including ourselves, have started already in the 80s to make a dynamical formation of structure. And most of these algorithms are using formation of whole stacks as one unit. So you form a whole stacking region when it's available and you form it at the time. This has been inspired by measurements of these cooperative processes. That means you have a difficult nucleation for this process, but after you did the nucleation, then the stack folds very fast in adding additional base pairs. There is a French group, Nicolas Printon, Christine Jacob, and Patrick Degelen, and they have conceived an algorithm which in principle can be reduced to elementary steps being base pair formation and base pair cleavage. And the other algorithm has been done in our group and was published last year in RNA, where we do precisely this also. We do it with a rather fast computer implementation. And there is a second paper which come out in the next issue of RNA. What is the folding algorithm doing? It assumes there is an ordered set of structures which you can understand as the suboptimal structures, S0 being the minimum free energy structure. And what we do now is you start with some conformation, which in our case happens to be the open chain. And then you compute the trajectory, where every step is done with some kind of move out of a set of allowed moves. And you can define a set of stopping structures. Whenever you reach the minimum free energy structure, you stop. And then it turns out, if you want to discuss metastable state, you have to introduce other structures as stopping structures. You could, of course, say, if I want to compute the thermodynamic limit, then I just should continue, but you immediately run into great problems with computer time. So the work with the stopping structure, that you actually have a stochastic process with an absorbing barrier or several absorbing barriers, is the way we were choosing here. And now, and this is the major point, is you have to compute your transition probabilities. This is the probability to undergo a change from conformation Si to Sj. And they are defined in this way. This is not the usual Monte Carlo way. The usual Monte Carlo way, you would take one factor 1 and the other one delta G divided by RT. It turns out that this assumption is more efficient. Splitting the free energy into both directions turns out to be more useful. It actually has been introduced in the 60s by Kawasaki for computation of diffusion constants. And the major point now is that these delta G values are precisely the same as those used in the folding algorithm. For any kind of conformation, you have to be able to compute the free energy. And this allows you also to introduce other interactions than you usually use in the secondary structure computation. You can compute pseudonodes. You can compute end-on-end stacking in this way, because there are no assumptions made on dynamic programming or whatever you're using here. No, these are all states which have an energy below the free chain. And the majority of them are not minima. The majority are settle points of all these conformations. And there is a subset representing minima in the sense that every move out of such a state goes up in energy. Okay? So these are all states. These are the settle points, and since we are referring to the open chain, we actually haven't found maxima. But the minima are the ones we are interested in, and they're very shallow minima. And so what we actually are doing is, this is a state, let me say, conformation SK. And now I apply all possible moves. I apply all possible moves, base pair opening, base pair closure, and you will see another move turned out to be important as well. And if all these moves go up, then it's a local minimum.
So you know that under one couple, so
There are many moves that you can make. It's not only one. It's many moves that you can make from. Yeah, you open a base pair, you close another base pair if that is possible, and there's just one more. Yeah. Now this comes. This comes now. I show you all our moves, which we. This is the difference in the energies of the conformations, which are computed by a set of empirically determined parameters.
Yes.
The only thing is, in Monte Carlo, you divide your free energy in such a way that it's one for going down, and the full exponential for going up. That's how you split it in Monte Carlo. Yeah. Yes. Well, the yes. No, well, they may be positive or negative.
Yeah.
It depends. In one direction, it's negative, and the other one is positive. Yeah, but that doesn't deduct. That actually doesn't matter. You are choosing it, and then you take the next step. This has been shown in this paper by Kawasaki, that you may use it without violating the role of the stochastic process being stationary. Okay. Now the moves, and these are the simplest things that you can think of. It's, you see here, base pair formation, base pair cleavage, and also base pair formation may be a nucleation of a new stack. Now here you get your higher energy because of the delta G, which you are looking into. So we don't worry anymore, and we do not worry that you need a nucleation parameter because it's in the energies already contained. And it turned out that it is an advantage to add another move which is this base pair shift. So you have a base pair here, and you shift it over to there, and you get this structure. This is here within. This is the same diagram you have seen with the strings and the arcs. You can also turn the string into a circle and then make straight lines. And the base pair shift is within the allowed region. You change one base pair for another. So it's simultaneous opening and closing of a base pair. It turns out when you introduce this shift move, then... Excuse me?
Link.
Yeah. Well, usually you cannot shift very far because you have so many structures in between. There is no restriction in length. This might be a little bit artificial, but it plays only a role when you have very few base pairs at the very beginning. Later in the process, you have only small shifts. That's right. And I just show you an example. Well, now there is one constant, which is free for the time scale, which we... Yeah, no, we have the energies, which are determined, which are not free. But then we can scale the whole process. And this...
In addition to that, the last constant you mentioned, you have one base...
Yeah.
...and half to another one. If they're both complementary, there will be no energy cost. But then...
Well, okay. So if there is no energy cost, then they occur with equal frequency. So it stays with equal frequency, stays where it is, and it goes to the other one.
So you pretend there's no barrier in this shifting.
In this shifting, we pretend, since it's an elementary proof, elementary move, we say there is no barrier in it. Why are we using the shift move? We can do without. We can't do without. But there are some relations of interrelating structures. For instance, this has been measured experimentally, the one above, where you see that it occurs with a speed which is certainly faster than opening and closing all bases individually. So there is experimental evidence. And the other thing is it gets much faster. So it speeds up the process. Now I show you three molecules forming the same secondary structure. They fold into the same secondary structure, which is just a simple hairpin in this case. And this is now the folding, the characterization of folding, where we compute the fraction of the molecules which have reached at time t ground state. So this is all the molecules which have reached the ground state to a certain temperature, and it's the average of a couple of thousand trajectories, what you have to use in order to find convergence. Now what you see here is there are two curves, I2 and I3, corresponding to these two sequences, which more or less show a folding in a certain time scale. Please note this is a logarithmic time scale here. And there is one case, this number two. And number two happens to fold to a certain extent. And then you see, waiting for a long time until you get the formation of the second fraction of these molecules. And now what we want to do now is we want to understand it. And we want to interpret it by means of what we called the barrier trees. And let me start with the conformation, with the sequence I2. This is one of the fast folding molecules. What you see here is there is a number of conformations which you actually need not take into account because you go from the open chain. You have a barrier of 2 kilocalories, and then there is a state up there, which is an unstable state, being a saddle point, and then you go down here. So you have a direct pass without any traps going from the open chain to the minimum free energy structure. If you do the same thing for the molecule number one, which did not fold efficiently, what you see here is it looks like that. The barrier tree has the following shape. So when you go up here from the open chain, you can equally well fall down here, or you can fall down here in this valley, or you can go up and eventually reach the ground state S0. So what this inflection and the second part of the curve really means is molecules that went from the open chain to some of these states here and then had to go out of this trap, which takes a lot of time to fold into desired minimum here. Now the difference between the sequences 2 and 3 was also interesting, because there is a general conjecture that more stable molecules fold more efficiently. And what we can show here, this is not the case. Please. Yeah.
And it's not accessible through the original line. So if you go to the end of the line and then you go like that to the ground state, so it can't be seen in this tree of the others. And they are there.
I didn't understand what you were saying. Just let me. You mean this one here? So you go up here. You mean you fall down here?
So, for example, when you are there, you don't need to go back and come to the ground state.
Yeah.
There would be a path which goes directly
from. No, the no. These are all paths shown here with our move set. Well, this is defined for a move set. For a certain move set, you get a certain barrier tree. But there are no other paths. So this is for this barrier tree, it is important that you have all suboptimal structures, and from all suboptimal structures, we have a special algorithm which computes all saddle points, which lead you from one to the other, and from this you draw the. Yeah. Now if you. If you consider different moves, for instance, you allow complete stacks to open and to close. The situation may be different. This is for the moves which I have defined. And there are differences. They are, fortunately, they are not very pronounced, but there are some differences that some saddle points within the full move set become small local minima if you only make base pair cleavage and opening. So the tree, the barrier tree, depends on the set of allowed moves. If you think about it, it's quite natural, because if you in order to walk on such a surface, you have to have certain accepted changes. And this is here base pair opening and base pair closure. In a real situation, it might be, for instance, rotation or partial rotation about the bond.
So then how do you know what type of move are actually more natural to come than the real scenario?
Okay. Now, base pair opening and base pair closure is usually used. And the shift move, there are data measured in the 70s and 80s. Dietmar Börschke, who measured the closure of stacks and the opening of stacks, and he measured independently the time for base pair opening and base pair closure. And if he calculated then for the whole stack, he found the stack folds faster. than he should. And so he claimed that there is this kind of shift move which allows, without going through the same barriers, base pair opening and base pair closure. So this is the physical motivation for it.
So somebody, somebody did some experiment.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Terry? Is it often said from your open state, you can immediately go to some state that's
close to the minimum? Well, this is... this you have a very large number of sequences forming the same structure. You can actually find all kinds of situation, and this case is less frequent than the other one I was showing you before. But we have not systematically checked this yet, because you have, as you can immediately understand, this is 28 bases long. So you have, with 16, you have 4 billion different sequences, and quite a large number is falling into the structure. So you find barrier trees of many different. Please. Yeah, well, this is predefined. If I want to study how I go from here to here, then this is the only stop state, because otherwise I can only measure how many ended up here. But I want to see the time it takes to come here.
What I'm asking is, if you previously say that you stop at S0 and S1, you hit S1 and you stop.
Okay, now this was my mistake. This was my mistake. I should have said here that in this case, where we look on folding into the minimum free energy structure, it's only one stopping state. But I show you a little bit later. I show you a case where we're working with different stopping states. Okay, there was one, please.
Because of stochastic nature, then implemented in your Mamikhalov step.
Yeah.
How could you be sure that you actually accounted for all the suboptimal states? I mean, I'm still confused.
Now this
the
you
number,
can.
Number of trials you have.
Yeah.
Mamikhalov.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need to go through, I mean, I don't know how many, it's majorly, potentially, presumably, it's more increasing with the...
Yeah, you have to, what we are doing is we ask a question. For instance, what does the folding curve look like? The percentage folding into the minimum free energy structure. Or what are the percentages the folding molecule reaches different states? And then we compute trajectories until we have convergence. That's all what we are doing.
So what is the biological motivation for stopping?
The biological motivation is, if the barrier is sufficiently high, you won't crossing during the time.
Then you don't have to stop either. So
yeah, but then you have to continue for infinite time, your computation. Well, it depends. The frequency depends on the energy. If this is 15 or 20 kilocalories per mole, then...
Well, in this case, they're very close. So if you don't stop, you're more or less the equally populated. If you only stop at S0, you'll only end up at S0. Very different.
Well, what we want to see is how the folding curve, what you actually observe when you watch molecule going into S0. Now this is 0.5 kilocalories per mole are sufficient with the Boltzmann factor to populate this much more than the other one. So they are not equal. Excuse me?
What's KT in kilocalories
per mole? KT? That's 2. 1 kT. You can here look for the equilibration. This can also be done, but you see here directly in the barrier tree an explanation why some molecules, and this is an experimental fact, you have some molecules that fold efficiently and you modify it on a few positions, they still make the same structure, but they don't fold efficiently. So this is the idea, to give an explanation for that, please. Excuse me? No, if you... This is, you define, in the algorithm, you define your stopping state. And you could also define no stopping state and compute the distribution on the states what you get. It turns out that this takes very long before convergence.
So what you do is that you would end up in the local minimum and you would stay there forever. So what you would respond to stop, then you restart the simulation,
right? We stop when we look for falling into the ground state.
Yeah.
When we reached. Excuse me.
The other procedure. I was important.
I show you one example. I show you one example. Now this is a case where you can really debate because it's in the range of KT, but there are other cases where this is 15 kilocalories per mole. And I'll show you immediately. Now there's one other thing which we found very interesting, and this is related. Excuse me.
You were making a point about the connection between stability and kinetics.
Yes. Yeah, I was keeping this now because now here you have just another sequence which folds equally efficiently as the I2, the one I have shown you before. But what you see here is that the molecule is much more stable in this case. So that 7.5 kilo all the way down. How we do that? We design GC base pairs which are more stable. So this is very simple how you do that. Now you see, but the barrier here is the same. So you cannot assume that efficient folding parallel stability of the molecule. And there are many other examples. It seems, however, that in nature there is often a selection for both. You see the biomolecules in nature, they are stable and they fold efficiently. But this is not something that goes really parallel. This is two features you have to select for. And this is just this example which I wanted to use. Yeah. Here, they are unimportant in this case. They have positive energies. So the maturity of all trajectories goes up here into this state and falls down right here. Yeah. Right, but if you look at the probability to go to this path up there, you have a very low probability. But you start from here. Where are the other paths? You said don't see them.
In this barrier state, is it really just a state or sort of a collection of states that allow them?
No, there are states here. The way down, which turn out to be saddle points. And there is a state at the barrier. We give name only to the major local minima on the surface.
The very fact that you draw a tree.
Yeah.
Now, within secondary structure, it's not an approximation. Well, this tree is defined to have the minimum activation barrier. And there is only one to go from one to another one. The others, they are higher.
Well, I guess if you insert a tree from view to S1, you have to go past that 1.1 and 1.4 and then go there. Or there's a shorter path, which is called less.
No, there is no path going through a lower barrier.
From view from O to S1, there's only one path.
Yes. Well, there are higher paths, but that's the lowest.
No, the entropy can maybe, because you have a finite temperature, you you don't have to go through the lowest energy path.
Yeah, but yeah, if you do the calculation, there is no restriction. You can go all paths. But for the interpretation of the data, we draw these trees. Yeah, but we just if we want to look at all the possible relations. Now I see the misunderstanding. Perhaps I wasn't sufficiently clear. If you want to see all, now then it's completely confusing. And what we wanted to do is we wanted to look, and that's what the chemists usually do. We look on the pass which has the lowest activation barrier, and of course, it need not be representative. But since we can interpret our folding curves, it is useful in a way to do it. Please.
This part has a very low entropy, and therefore it's not reachable, and the system has to go to some higher path.
Yeah. Now, this would be the case, for instance, if you have many, many higher paths, which are not that much higher than you lose in your there's a balance. What you get in entropy, you have to pay in higher energy.
But in the dynamics defined before, entropy was included, right?
No.
If you have two base pairs which are very far away, they will take much longer to get close together than if they are close
under. Yeah, but yeah. Now this actually, as I said, plays only a role in the initial phase of the process.
But the dynamics you proposed. There are many ways to go somewhere.
If you have already many base pairs, you cannot shift very far away. But this is usually not possible because you would cross another base pair. But you are right. It would be good to include an entropy, which, by the way, if it's included in loop formation, is completely there. So if you make loops the size 3, 4, 5, the entropy is accounted for. If you go to 25 and larger, then it's not. But they play no role when you are close to the
moon. Once you have this diagram, can you get the time of going from, say, the open chain to S0?
No. This is something which we are studying in the moment. We have not really the full data on it. It seems that in many cases you get a good estimate by just doing Arrhenius law. In other cases, and this might be cases where you have a multiplicity of other paths, then we get deviations. But this is something we are aiming at. We have not yet done it. But okay. So now let me come to one case which I consider being especially interesting. And this is the one which I have shown you already at the beginning. This is a situation where we have a sequence which is compatible with two structures, as I said, which have no base pair in common. So here you pair from one end to the other when you make this hairpin, and here you pair from one end to the middle when you make this double hairpin. And it turns out that for this sequence, this is the minimum free energy, and this is a suboptimal conformation. And if you look on the barrier tree here, is what you see is there is actually no lower pass. And now I can be very precise because I'm looking on the lowest pass. So to go from here to here, in this structure, there is no lower pass than the one going. There are higher paths, but there is no lower pass except that one. And if you sum up all these energies, this is 6, 5, and so on, you are up to 20 kilocalories per mole. So there is no way to come from this structure to the other one at room temperature. When you fold the molecule, and this is something that's this is the open chain in this case. and higher states are not shown, because there are lots of states in this case. And what you see here is, this is the fraction of molecules folded into conformation S1, and this is the fraction of molecules folded into conformation S0. And what you see here is and here we were choosing all local minima as stopping states. And what you see here is they actually fold into these two states. But one thing is interesting. The minimum free energy structure forms only with a lower frequency than the suboptimal state. And it's about a factor of 2 if you look carefully. Now, people doing kinetics can immediately interpret that. This, in order to make this structure, you have one possibility to nucleate by bringing both ends together. In order to make this structure, you have 2 possibilities to nucleate. To go from the right-hand end to the middle, make a first base pair, to go from the left-hand end to the middle. And this gives you a statistical weight of 2 for this structure compared to statistically weight 1 for the other one. You have 2 nucleation processes.
Can you nucleate at any base pair?
You can nucleate at any base pair. But I don't have the same number of base pairs, but whenever you do a nucleation, it has the same probability in this case to do it. If you start here, making this at the first base pair, you can't do anything else except forming this structure, unless you open the base pair, but this holds for any base pair, the same. So you really have two nucleation processes which end up at the same structure. Now this is look at this tree. Look at this tree. This has 20 kilocalories per mole to go from here to here. So to get to the Boltzmann distribution would take time to the end of the universe. Excuse me? I didn't quite understand you.
Let's put back the time course.
Yeah. Now this is the fast process we are seeing here. And then superimposed with very, very low time constant, you would have another process that goes to the equilibrium state. Yes, way out. Well, in this direction, it's almost San Francisco. No, this is... And this is something we have to keep in mind if we are dealing with such large barriers, and that comes quite frequently. And I will show you a real example in a second. Yeah, okay. Now this is something I was interrupted. I wanted to say, because we want to adjust our time to some reasonable experimental time scale. And we have a number of carefully measured examples. And time is free in our case, so we adjust our time scale empirically to the folding times some of these molecules. There is a certain problem, because these are 0 degree Kelvin data for folding. There are higher data, but then folding is not complete. And the most of the parameters determining the free energies are 25 degree parameters.
So, given your dynamical algorithm, you claim if you would wait an infinite time, the relation would change.
Yeah. So I would, if I would make no stopping state, I just let the system go, and then make a time average of frequencies when the individual minima were visited. Then I would, of course, come in infinite time to the thermodynamic limit. But what I am saying is the barrier in between is so high that you actually can't pass it.
Please. Monumental time scale usually has nothing to do with the real time scale.
Yeah, now here we are not doing Monte Carlo to find the minimum. We want to have a model for the folding process. And we can, within our approximation, we can assign a time scale by looking on an experimental system, and this experimental system has a time constant which has been measured, and we can adjust it, and that fits reasonably well with our data. Please. This is in the range of milliseconds.
So you were showing us a real example of this connect.
Yeah, sure. So, how much time do I have?
Well,
minus 20 minutes.
I should be before lunch.
Okay. So, now what I would like to show you here is you can do things for tRNAs, and this is now folding of tRNAs. This is what you see here is the barrier tree of tRNAs. You have families of structures. Here you have the clover leaf, and these are now, after we computed the barrier tree, we declared all these major valleys. You see you have really major valleys, and this again are the lowest pathways from one to the other. There are higher ones. And so here, this is a second valley, third valley, and so on. So we are dealing here with six different valleys. The minimum free energy structure in this case happens not to be the clover leaf. Nevertheless, the clover leaf is formed, and this is now folding data, these percentages. We declare them all stopping states, and we ask how many trajectories going one minimum and the other minimum. And if you look carefully, they have all very high barriers in between. So this is really a reasonable approach. And you see 54% go into the clover leaf. Excuse me?
What is
this one here. 50%, that's the clover leaf there.
Okay. What
no, this is another one here. Without modified bases. When you do the same thing with base modification, for tRNA phase, you see here that you get a much higher percentage. Actually, it comes close to complete. So you take out. Now, I'm again referring to the principle that's behind and not to any specific detail. You take out some bases, so that they cannot form base pairs, which happens by modification. And you channelize your folding process in such a way that this structure becomes predominant. And just at the end, before I talk about the experiment, this is again when you see the folding pattern here. This is the folding with modified bases. And this is the folding without modified bases. So you see here much, much faster. And here you see this typical situation where you were, we said about 50%, get first caught into one of the other minimum. You have a very slow recovery. When nature does, and nature does it by evolution. So the ones that were folding better were modified. Excuse me. In the models, we take the modified bases. Some of them can base pair, the others cannot base pair, and we assign some not very precise parameters to those who can pair. The others just can't pair, so they have no pairing partner. Oh, where they are in the sequence. These are the natural positions. Excuse me?
I was just saying, that was a real sequence.
Yeah, this is a real sequence now. Okay. And the final. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can drastically change the funnel by just changing base person stability and make an AU, replace it by a GC. And you can also change it, for instance, by taking out the possibility to pair for one base. Call it a modification.
What's a physical-chemical region for which you sort of assign certain base pairs and say, well, you guys are not supposed to pair up with others? Certain bases?
Well, the geometry is precisely known. For RNA, this is the A helix. The double helix is the A helix. It's been called A, was first found with DNA, and RNA happens to form A double helix of the A structural type. And the base pairs which go into this helix, they have to have a certain geometry. You may have base pairs with different geometry at the end of the helices. This is now frequently found, and there you can have an A pairing with a G and many other things.
I give you a real RNA sequence.
Yeah.
How do you know which bases I need to assign them? I need to pick out and say, well, those are the bases I'm supposed to.
Well, with the folding algorithm, you can pick any which are allowed to pair. G and C, C and G, A and U, U and A. And to make the story a little bit more complicated, in RNA stacks, it's also allowed to have G with U. And anything else is not allowed. Yes.
Please. As far as I understand, your main idea is that folding of the RNA is under kinetic control.
Yeah.
And this kinetic control brings you to the native state.
It may be under kinetic control and go to the native state. And in many cases, and this is what I wanted to say, nature evolves in this direction, the molecules.
And
it's also the minimum free energy state.
And then fixes by modification.
Yes, yes,
state.
Yeah.
But
well, no, this is not true. Because I said there are these introns in the tRNA. And the introns are cut out after modification. tRNA is complicated with this respect. You have the ribonucleus P working on the polyt tRNA.
So what actual physical process you consider when you consider folding without modification, and you say that folding without modification goes with in presence of intron.
What we say is do the modification, stabilize the structure, and do they facilitate folding? These are the two questions. We are not referring, because that's not really very well known, to the natural process, because that's very complicated. That's really very complicated, because you have this, and not every tRNA has an intron. But we're just wanting to address this principal question. And now I think I skip part of it and I tell you the experiment, which has been done by a group at MIT, Eric Schultes and David Patel. And the paper has appeared in Science this July. And what they have done is the following. They have looked on catalytic RNA molecules, and they found two catalytic RNA molecules that were not at all related phylogenetically, and these are both catalytically active. They are not related because by the reaction they are catalyzing. And these are complicated molecules. You see pseudonauts and so on. This is a ligase which combines two molecules together, two RNA molecules, to make a longer RNA molecule. And this is a cleavage enzyme which cleaves off this part of the molecule. This is a natural enzyme coming from hepatitis delta virus. And this here is an artificially designed enzyme by the group of Jack Szostak in Boston. They have designed this enzyme. The two structures have no base pair in common. You can look at it carefully, you see it immediately. And it's a complicated fold, so it's not just such a simple thing. Now, they had read our suggestion that whenever you have two folds, you can find a sequence that can adopt both folds. And they designed the sequence, and this is now the same sequence put on both folds. And they synthesized the sequence chemically, and then after synthesis, they let the molecule fold. And what they got is, and this is I'm going to show you here, what they got is a molecule that had indeed both catalytic activities. This is one and the same molecule showing you both catalytic activities. It's a ligase. This is the relative ligation rate. And it's a cleavage enzyme. This is the relative cleavage rate. And here, this is background, here and here. So it's well above background. It's a logarithmic scale here. And now what they do is they take this sequence and make point mutations, one after the other. And here in this direction, these are two different directions in sequence space, here they improve the cleavage rate. And with two point mutations, they come close to the natural enzyme already. And here with three-point mutations, they come close to the ligase, which had a completely different sequence. And what they have done afterwards is they have walked into the direction of the natural sequence by doing single-point mutations or base pair exchanges. And they could find a path that had the always the activity of the natural enzyme. And this is the other case here. They found a path which had practically always the ligation rate of this artificial enzyme, which was the one reference and the other reference. And if you look here, look on this folding, no base pair in common. There is no chance that one molecule can be converted into another one. So they let it fold, get a mixture of both structures by the same sequence and showing both catalytic activities.
So please. How can they inconvenient occurrence on the other side?
Which side?
Well, if we start to mutate towards the cleavage activity, the cleavage.
Now, this is the intersection. This is the sequence which has both activities. Okay?
Right, but if I make one mutation,
does that sequence fold into a unique molecule or they
no.
can both?
Fold in both.
Either way.
That's what I said, that folds in both. Otherwise, it couldn't have both catalytic activities. No, they tried.
The curve they,
up yeah. Now, they looked for they tried to. A large number of single point mutations, and they took the best one.
Oh, this is the best path.
Yes. Okay. Well, this is the best path that they could find. And you know, with 88, you have 3 × 88 single point mutations. So not for every step they did all of them. They just continued until they got one which was really good.
And for the whole path, the structure stays the same.
Yeah. Now this is. This is not very simple to prove. What they have done is they have just looked at the chemical degradation data. They split loops and so on, and which can be done very quickly. There's not a structure determination for every point along this curve. But they determined that the structures are known for these two. But these two for the endpoints are known. And the active site certainly is not changed. And then they have done a number of experiments which are hints that the structure does really not change. Now you might, please.
Is this similar to a prion?
Excuse me?
Is this similar to the prion?
No.
One sequence can change.
No, and the prion, you're discussing that you have an additional molecule coming from outside, forcing a molecule into another conformation via binding. And this is, you get two conformations just by letting the molecule fold, which was chemically synthesized. Well, with a sufficiently large probability, though, that you can have, you can measure enzymatic activity. The real fraction has not been determined. But if you look here, that the RASA looks that they have a big amount of both present. So if this would be a factor of two below, this would be 0.3 on this scale here. And if you have 50 to 50%, then your enzymatic activity for both reactions would be 1/2 of that of the single molecule. So you can actually not conclude about the fraction here. And this is something that has to be determined. And that's not very simple. It's rather tricky. But so far, it's really a nice and clear experiment. Now, I see I have talked over time. And I can just briefly tell you what I wanted to do then, to go from the single sequence problem to the problem. Okay, I can? Okay, thank you, but I don't want to exhaust you. Okay. Then I will briefly come to my second part. And the second part, as I said at the beginning, was motivated by looking on RNA evolution data. Now, if you form secondary structures, and Ivo Hofacker, in his PhD thesis, designed an algorithm that allows you to find sequences folding into a given RNA structure as minimum free energy structure. This algorithm is called inverse folding. I don't want to go into the detail here. You let the algorithm start with random seeds, and then it produces a sequence folding into that structure, and you continue. And the answer that you get is, it's lots of sequences. If you write down a structure like this, it's lots of sequences what actually form the same secondary structure. Now, we like to use this notion of sequence space, where you have a discrete space. Every sequence represents a point. And distance between two points is given by the number of mutations, which you need to come from one point to the other. If you're only dealing with point mutations, it's the Hamming distance, which is well known from informatics. And the result of this drawing is many points map into one point in structure space, which we call shape space here. If you go to the evolutionary relevant drawing, it would look like the following. Here we have sequence space. Then we model the formation of a structure by a mapping, which is called psi of a sequence I, giving you some structure SK. And for the evolutionary relevant part, you have to map it into fitness values, because fitness is what counts, the number of progeny you have in the next generation. And there may be several structures having the same fitness values, but we know there are many, many structures from sequence space, because this is so much larger than the number of possible structures that map into one of these stable structures. And we started some time ago to analyze this mapping, and I'll just tell you briefly what we have done. We wanted to have a mathematical model, and it turns out that random graph theory was very useful for that. Then we did something which seems to be very stupid. we took all sequences, folded all the sequences, and analyzed the structures we got. Within the algorithm and within the parameter set, then we get an exact reference. Of course, this is not really it's not the real structures. However, it is exact within the model. The limitation is you cannot go to very large chain lengths because of this exponential increase in the number of objects you have to handle, and a few times 10 to the 9 up to 10 to the 10 approximately is our limit what we have. You can do statistical evaluation and you can do computer simulations of the process, but I don't want to go into that. Now, if you want to calculate structure, the number of possible structures, you can do that. There is a formula by Waterman which you can adapt, and I just am showing you how combinatorics looks for these molecules. You calculate this structure by means of a recursion formula which needs at least two arrays, and you can compute it. You cannot really handle it analytically, but there is an asymptotic equation available for this number of structures. And why do we need it? We want to know what's the relation of the number of sequences. And I don't know whether you can read it, whether it's too small. I put it up as much as possible. So you see, this is the number of two-letter sequences. This is the number of four-letter sequences. And this is the number of structures computed from recursion. What you see immediately, we have many more sequences than structures. And then you can, for instance, look into the various alphabets. Only G and C, U, G and C, A, U, G and C, A, U, G and A, U. And you can actually fold all molecules and look how many structures you get. And of course, not all the structures which are possible by the recursion formula do actually occur as minimum free energy structures. You get that when you make the alphabet larger, you get more structures. As you can see here, AU usually has fewer structures because of the weakness of the base pair. So this is something that you can actually do. And this we have done and published in the literature. And this is just, in a nutshell, the four results that we got here from mapping sequences into structures. We have many more sequences than structures. This is one thing that I have shown you already. Then it turns out they are not of equal frequency. You have relatively few common structures, and you have a long tail of rare structures which are formed by very few sequences only. And then, I'm not going to talk about this here, but this is the most important, most relevant point here. These structures are represented now in sequence space in a very special way, and I have to explain here for you what I mean by a neutral network. Let me say here, I have some sequence. I look on two particular letters here, change it from CA to GU, and this can be done in two Hamming distance, two steps. So in order to restrict to single point mutations, we have here a square which has four Hamming distance one relations. And this is in most of the experiments, and also in under natural conditions, you have very rarely more than one mutation by one replication. So let me say this is sequence space, and now I wanted to draw here for you as a matter of illustration, but I left my pen up there. Is there a pen? No, I can also do it on the plane, you're right. No. So what I wanted to show you here is, here we have all these various points These are sequences folding into the same minimum free energy structure. And now we connect all of them, which are of Hamming distance 1, and we get the graph in this way. Now this graph may be, thank you very much, it's great. So that means all Hamming distance 1 connections are this, here. So, and this graph we call the neutral network. And in this case, you see, has two components, because there is no way with a Hamming distance 1 move to go from here to here. Now, what we have done is we wanted to simulate this situation, to model it by a mathematical model based on random graph theory. And what we do is we just throw in nodes and edges at random. I throw in a node here, for instance, and I throw in a node here. And the parameter, when I throw in this node here, I got immediately a further node here. And you do this by obeying a single parameter. And this single parameter is the number of neighbors. So for instance, let me put this one in here too. This one has got 4 neighbors having the same structure. This one has only 2 neighbors, has 2 other neighbors. This one has 1 neighbor, 3 other neighbors having another structure. And the nice thing, if you apply this concept here, you have to compute the average value of nearest neighbors. So this should be blue. I don't know whether you can see this very well. These are the blue ones here, but it doesn't matter. You have 12 blue ones out of 27. This is how you compute this lambda. And then you have to average over the whole network. And theory tells you immediately there is a connectivity threshold, which is in a way related to percolation phenomenon. It's not precisely the same, but it's related to it. And it turns out this critical value of the numbers in the neighborhood is 1 minus k to the minus 1 divided by k minus 1. This gives you an expression which is readily to evaluate, and kappa is nothing but the alphabet size. Depends on the alphabet size where this connectivity threshold is. If lambda for a given network is below threshold, then the network is above threshold, then the network is connected. If it's below, if it's fewer neighbors, then it is not connected. And you see here for the four-letter alphabet, what you need is about 37% of all your neighbors have to form the same structure to get the connected network. This may be difficult for large sequences, but random graph theory tells you one more thing. If you are below threshold, your islands, your connected islands, are not equally distributed. You have one which is very large and many small ones. So whenever you are on a large area, evolution allows you to progress with step 1 moves in mutation space. I have here just 2 examples. This is one where you are below threshold, typically with a giant component and many islands. Now when you are on this component with a population, you can move without changing structure for quite a distance. And here you have it for the case which is above threshold. Now, how do we have to imagine how the sequence space is actually filled up with structures? But this is just a sketch. You have one which makes a huge connected island, and this is well above threshold. It's 0.446. And then here, for instance, this is the open chain, which does not fold, and this is just dispersed, having many single points. And This is just one illustration that was a number of structures. You fill your whole sequence space up, please.
So given the structure, can you calculate lambda a priori?
Yes. Not a priori, but you have to do it with a computer. With computer computation, you can get it. You just choose sequences which form the structure. You compute the whole one-error neighborhood, and you get the fraction. This is straightforward. Lambda is easy to compute, and converges very well.
You don't even have random graph. You have neighborhoods, but you have to work in a high-dimensional space.
With yes. Yes. Yes.
So you say this is essentially like.
Yeah. Now we had the idea to use random graphs. Because our networks are not randomly distributed in sequence space, but they have a number of features which come very close to random graphs. For instance, it's high dimensional. For instance, most of the points lie in this mid plane, which has highest frequency and so on. So the deviation are important for the chemistry and for the biochemistry, but the general properties like percolation and so they are not important. And so this is the sketch, and well, let me finally come to this Patel experiment, which I actually want to interpret by means of such neutral networks coming close together. Here you have a neutral network. This is the dark part here, and the lighter part here in the surrounding are sequences which do not fold into the structure K, SK as the minimum free energy structure, but have it in the suboptimal set. There are many more sequences that have the structure in the suboptimal set. And the neutral network is embedded in such a set, which we call the set of compatible sequences. And now, if you look, when two neutral networks, and this is like the blue one and the red one we have seen in the experiment, when they come close together. Here you see this is such a point. Let me say this is one ribosome, this is the other ribosome. The two neutral networks cannot have a single point in common because either one is the minimum free energy structure or the other one. But then, and this is an enlargement, this is this point here. Then you have a situation, this is now this intersection, which is shown here where these points have a halo everywhere. You can have a situation where these points, the sequences, form the red structure as minimum free energy structure and the blue one as a suboptimal. You can have the other situation where the blue is the minimum free energy structure and the red one is suboptimal. And then you can also have in this at this point with the pink halos where both are suboptimal conformations and the minimum free energy structure is another one. Both is possible. Now my bet is, but this is very hard to prove, that what actually Schultes and Patel are seeing is a situation where one is the minimum free energy structure and the other one is a suboptimal, which are both separated by a high barrier, which I have shown you in case of this model example before. And what they have shown in addition is when you are on such a neutral networks, one of these, it's easy to find a path where you stay with the same properties. And so I would say this, as far as we don't know more details about these experiments, if they are in really good agreement, which was what we have predicted about 8 years ago. Now, more details coming up, then you have to refine your model. And one thing you might ask yourself immediately, why does the secondary structure work in this case? And we have many other cases where we know we have to have very subtle tertiary interactions in order to have the molecules functional. And I think there is a straightforward explanation. What they are looking here is just one reaction was a catalytic center, and another reaction was another catalytic center. And the rest of the molecule just have to have sufficient structure to bring to sustain these catalytic centers. When you compare it with a tRNA, it has to fulfill many, many, many constraints simultaneously. And here you have only one constraint, therefore you have a very simple situation. Two things I would like to mention. Many things remain to be done. For instance, it's not trivial to unite the concept of neutral networks and intersections with other versions of structure, like, for instance, partition functions or kinetic folding. But we are going to do that. And what I could not talk about it is, it is important now, but this has been said by Gary yesterday already, to include so-called tertiary interactions, which you can include because they can be easily classified. There's coaxial stacking, pseudonauts, and so on. Well, I want to mention the people in Vienna and in Santa Fe, in Los Alamos, and in Jena, Germany, who over 15 years have contributed to the work I was reporting here. This is Peter Stadler, Ivo Hofacker, who did the major contribution to make the Vienna RNA package working, and Christoph Lamm did the kinetic folding. Walter Fontana is now at the Santa Fe Institute, did mainly the evolutionary part. Christian Reides is a mathematician. He did the random graph approach. And this Walter Grüner did the exhaustive folding. So he was really very patient in dealing with billions of structures. Thank you very much.